Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. It is Friday, the 3rd of April, 2020. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in Auckland. And it's good to see everyone again. I'm making sure to redirect everyone to the Unshackled channel since we are only live on the Unshackled. And we likely will be for the duration of the lockdown. So thank you everyone for joining us. And I will repeat that one more time for the chat as well. There is no Right Binds stream because Tim's not in his studio and only has access to discount software.
Well, I'm planning to upgrade it in due course, but as I've said to everybody during my broadcast here, it's obviously I've got all the basic things set up, but it'll eventually get better as as people can see behind me, I've started to decorate the set behind me, so it's all improving all the time. Now, we were a few minutes late in starting tonight. We were waiting for James Fox Higgins to wrap up his latest show, which was quite interesting. It was talking about the death of democracy and the coronavirus pandemic, focusing on Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who has now got the power to rule by decree, which, well, he was already not liked by a lot of the Western media and elites, and now they fear him even more.
That's right. And his powers, his supposedly, you know, he's like, oh, he's the dictator, and he's got all of these powers, which is the same that Jacinda has now. I suspect similar to what Scott Morrison have and many other world leaders. But they're obviously very upset with Viktor Orban because he got the wrong memo when they said to him that you need to fight the virus. He thought that they were talking about cultural Marxism.
Well, the kids are not at school, so there is the virus is killing cultural Marxism as well.
Exactly. Suddenly everybody's a homeschooler. Everybody's working from home. There are some silver linings to all of this, and we like to focus on some of the positives and focus on some of the sort of calmer issues and, break down a lot of the hype and the hysteria. And we'll be doing a lot of that on this show, I think. We'll be going over what's been happening in Australia and in New Zealand, especially, and probably trying to take a stab at what the way forward is. But again, like last week, everything changes very quickly every day, and it's very difficult to make predictions.
Oh, predictions about what government's going to do and what the virus itself is going to do. Now, remember, because we are on the Unshackled YouTube channel, which is monetized, you can send a direct super chat via the live chat by pressing the dollar button, choose your amount and choose your message, and we'll read it out on air in its entirety. But yes, last week I was listening to you talk about New Zealand's lockdown and Princess Jacinta from a Princess Palace, as I've decided to call it, or is she the Princess of China? That's another title that she would be worthy of, but. In Australia, they're all saying that, look how well she's handled this. And if we do need to have a one world government, I wish that she would be the leader. But hearing you last week, I was sort of thinking, wow, it's not too bad what we've got in Australia at the moment. But this week, we've certainly, mainly our state governments have caught up in the totalitarian trophy race, as we call it.
Absolutely, it is a big race to see who can outdo each other in terms of the lockdown, and they run in the mantra of saving lives. You know, stay home, save lives is the motto, and the idea seems to be that the more people you can force to stay in their houses, the more lives you will save, and that is not something that I see stacking up in any of the countries around the world, and especially not here in New Zealand. I think what we're going to see in the end, looking back, is an insane amount of damage that was done due to hysteria and panic. And people, I think, are going to regret a lot of the drastic steps that have been taken. Not that steps should not have been taken. There certainly have been reasonable steps to take. But basically saying that you could destroy the entire economy and save lives is something that I do not see working out, because the economy isn't about, you know, the rich people and multinational corporations. The economy, and by the way, those massive corporations are the ones that are up and running in terms of just the supermarkets, right? The big names in here in New Zealand.
Yeah, the big corporations are doing well in New Zealand.
They're doing well, and what's been shut down in New Zealand, all of these small businesses, all of their family, you know, what they call the mom and pop business, people employing people in their own communities, all of these businesses just wiped out. And where are they going to go from here? What are people going to have left when this is all over? Because we're already talking about, okay, well, 4 weeks isn't really enough. And if we're committing to a total lockdown, then you need to be able to eradicate it and make sure it doesn't come back. And so else it's not worth it. And so you've got to keep going and keep going and keep going. And very few people are talking about, okay, well, how do you get out of this? And hang on a minute, is this actually a good idea? Is this actually worth it?
Well, New Zealand has taken the full-on extreme approach that saving lives from coronavirus trumps everything else, where in Australia they're acting on the medical advice, but they're trying to keep as many businesses operating as possible. Scott Morrison has said, we're not going to go to a full lockdown just to satisfy some people who are demanding it. We're not going to shut down businesses where there's not medical advice to do so. And you mentioned last week that even the takeaway outlets are closed there. You can't get even Macca's or KFC. Our fast food restaurants are still open, and even the local cafe can still be open as long as it's takeaway or delivery. I had drive-through KFC last night. It was still as tasty as ever, but it was
probably laced with viruses, Tim.
It was quite Jacinda a mechanic process.
Jacinda could have saved you.
Mm. Well, all I had to do was, when I got to the thing, is I obviously put my card out to PayPass, make sure that I didn't touch any of the actual FBOS machine, and the guy handed it to me, make sure that there was no way our hands could touch or anything like that.
So even here, I have been out to a couple of places. I've had to swipe my card almost every time because the contactless payment systems in New Zealand are not very widely implemented, and so you're out there and like everybody's standing in these lines, like lining up, you know, the socialist bread lines, and the wind's blowing in everyone's faces, and supposedly breathing is passing around the virus. Now that's the latest hype. Mm. Whether it'll hold, because again, every recommendation changes every other day. So basically everybody's standing there in line infecting each other. For what? Why? The idea is we will do something. You know, we'll do something, and then everyone will think that, at least we did something, right?
Yeah, if you literally like went the full Wuhan lockdown where people weren't even allowed to go to the supermarkets at all, they're not going to do that in Australia. The people, when they were uncertain about whether there would be a full lockdown, did all the panic buying there. That now that people know, because we had a National Cabinet meeting today, Scott Morrison announced that there were no further containment measures, and said that, as James Boom pointed out, we've moved to the suppression phase of not the people, but the virus.
We're not suppressing anybody. Don't worry, guys. You're not being suppressed. Mm. And the thing is, in New Zealand, supposedly in the elimination eradication phase, where they say, nobody dying is a good thing. But we lose 900, so nearly 1,000 people a year just on ordinary flu. And so who's not to say that, okay, well, certain losses here
well, you've had
are
one
acceptable.
Death now. You've had your first death.
We've had one death. That's right. It was a lady in her 70s. They say she had various issues. And that's the most likely outcome. You know, that is, if you look at all of the countries, you look at all of the stats, it's the elderly people who catch all kinds of things and die. Yes, greater risk here with this, with the pestilence here that's going around. But other than that, the approach that Jacinda has taken has been the Wuhan approach, which is saying, okay, Beijing has told us to copy their system because it worked to suppress the virus, but it hasn't. They lied, right? It's still there.
Oh yeah, they still claim that they've only got 80,000 infections.
So we're doing supposedly what they did, except we know that what they did is a lie. Mm. So why are we expecting any kind of outcome?
In Australia, definitely the animosity towards China, both in the mutterings of the ordinary people and in the political leaders, has increased. Politicians such as Malcolm Roberts from One Nation and George Christensen from the National Party have come out and said that we should be seeking compensation and reparations from China for creating this virus, whether it was through the bat soup or the accidental or intentional release from that bioweapons facility outside of Wuhan. And they have opened up again the wet markets in China now, selling
cats and dogs.
Yes.
And bats. Yep.
Yeah. So, and
exactly. It's Josh, the same. Nothing ever changes. Yeah.
Josh Frydenberg has basically made himself the teeth in the tiger of the Foreign Investment Review Board, because most people viewed that as a toothless tiger just waving through all these Chinese acquisitions. Now, Josh Frydenberg has said, I'm going to have the ultimate say on whether these foreign investments happen or not. And of course, he's inclined to say, and it's now illegal to ship medical and essential supplies over to China. Now there's been, I'll play it for you now. This was an Australian outside the Chinese consulate in Sydney. Let's have a look at this gentleman here. It's gone viral.
Wake up, Australia! No more shit from China. No more shit from China. Death to communism. Avian flu. They've released all these f***ing viruses for f***ing decades. Decades.
So there you go. There, people said he was like Indiana Jones there. I thought he was more like Mick Taylor, the villain from the Wolf Creek movies, because he dealt with foreigners in Australia in quite an extreme way.
Yes,
but yeah, that gives you a signal of sort of the underlying feeling in Australia.
Not a peep here in New Zealand. Not a peep here in New Zealand. You because of course we know the major parties are owned by China. The National Party, Labour Party, they all get their massive donations from China. The rest probably from industries connected to China who don't want to make too much of a stir. Very, very little noise at all. We hopefully will get a little bit more of that into the election season. We'll see. I actually remember now the debate a couple of weeks ago. They had a university debate and actually had the guy from the Opportunities Party, which is sort of like the radical the alt centrists.
Yeah, the radical centrist party.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah, basically those guys. And he actually pointed the finger at the other side of the room where all of the establishment guys were sitting and said, we're going to do this without any money from China, from all the communists. He said the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. Yeah.
There was a state Labor MP in New South Wales, and you might remember that it was the state Labor Party in New South Wales that accepted that $100,000 donation from that communist Chinese Connecticut businessman in an Aldi bag. So
can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Then. So this MP, Shawaquet Musselmane, he sparked controversy this week by saying China's President Xi Jinping had fought COVID-19 and contained it, describing the nation's response as emphatic and decisive. And he's been slapped down by the New South Wales Labor leader Jodi Mackay, who labelled the comments as inappropriate, which is. Mm-hmm. Well, that's putting it mildly, but at least she can, like, condemn them. Inappropriate is sort of the diplomatic term for saying, like, you know, he's an idiot for doing that.
Yeah. No, what our politicians have been up to instead has been rather pathetic. We've got a case today or yesterday where the health minister, David Clark, decided to go mountain biking. So he drove put his car up. Maybe you could show his car on the screen as well. He put his mountain bike into the back of his big van and with his face plastered all over it. And he drove down to the local mountain bike park, which apparently was not that far down the road. And then he was the only one there. He didn't think that was strange. He was mountain biking around.
Yeah, there he
supposedly
is there.
Getting his exercise.
He's got his face on the car there.
Yeah, so they supposedly you're not supposed to go outside, you're not supposed to do anything dangerous. Well, you are allowed to go outside, but you're not allowed to drive anywhere unless you are going to do something essential like getting groceries or getting medical care. Those are the only two supposedly legitimate reasons to drive. And if you're going to do exercise like biking around, walking around, you should do it locally without driving. He has since simply apologized for that. He just said sorry, basically, and life goes on.
So sort of like the Stuart Robert apology. My bad.
Yeah, my bad. Oops, I did an oopsie. And carried on. And then Jacinda has been holding her daily press conferences, or proclamations from the throne, as we've been calling them here. She didn't actually front up today. She sent some other fool guy to go and tell a sob story. Because she didn't want to deal with the questions of being asked about, you know, her MPs doing things that she has ordered the common people.
If Scott Morrison skipped a press conference after a national cabinet meeting, which I think meets about three times a week, there'd be massive questions. Though he has, unlike his response to the bushfires, he's been widely praised for his leadership during the pandemic. And Twitter has come, they came up during the bushfires with this nickname Scotty from marketing. But I actually think in this situation, it's a strength for him because part of marketing is public relations. And so he's sort of the national soother, trying to communicate the lockdown measures, trying to, because today what he did is talk about, because we have flattened the curve here, it's not rising at a rapid rate. In fact, the daily infection rates are starting to decline, are in single digits in the rise. And he's said, like, thank you, Australia. All we need to do now is just keep doing what we have been doing. If we'd continued business as usual, we'd have, because we've got 5,000 cases at the moment, we would have had over 10,000 cases. So he's trying to sort of say to the public, this is, I know this is hard, but this is worth it. Look at what we've achieved. We've just got to keep at it. So it's complete opposite from Jacinta in this situation.
Absolutely. And if you've looked at the numbers from South Korea, from Japan, from Taiwan, from Singapore, they've done mostly a similar thing where they've kept, you know, social distancing, no unnecessary gatherings. They've kept things reasonably open and very little spread going on there, according to the numbers. And they then are going, you know, it seems they're still slowly tightening it. Like the hysteria keeps getting ratcheted up. But it gets to a point where it's like, well, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Okay, we have the medical infrastructure to deal with this. Keep go, you know, go back to normal, essentially, and let the hospitals deal with the sick.
We've definitely in Australia, the as demonstrated by Scott Morrison's press conference today, there were no more measures announced. People now have a feeling and understanding what the next 6 months are going to be like. I know our Victorian Premier, Jenny Andrews, has said there's going to be a stage four, but he doesn't know what it'll be, which is...
we'll make it up when we get there.
Yeah, which I don't think is, like, just announce it when you've decided it. But
I think what happened in New Zealand actually was I don't know if it was intentional, but people said, oh, this is great. Jacinda's announced the stages of where we need to go. But then there was a petition with tens of thousands of people signing it to say, oh, can we go straight to stage four, please? You know, like people were begging to go straight to the maximum measures that she had suggested because people get, you know, got hyped up, panicked, you know, had the fear instilled in them by the media, and they just begged for this now. And then you have, you know, a lot of these people now suddenly being like, hey, wait, no, that's not what I really wanted. I didn't think it was going to be like this. And so whether this was a, you know, a good strategy by Jacinda or perhaps what seems to be more likely based on everything else the government is doing, sort of accidental incompetence, that seems to me the most dangerous thing this government has to offer is its incompetence. And it gets lucky because it's got the media to push its propaganda.
Our media, well, they haven't liked Scott Morrison for a while, basically because he was a master at not answering their questions. If you didn't like a question, he'd say, oh, that's a bubble question or that's gossip. And that's why they like went so hard after him during the bushfires, which is why Scott Morrison now is so keen to sort of be open to questions, to scrutiny and that, because he's had a hostile media and he knows that he needs not a compliant media, but he needs to satisfy the media's questions. So when they're relaying it to the public, they're not bashing him and causing more anxiety in the community, because the panic buying has stopped in Australia. The stock levels on the shelves are returning. There's now toilet paper in stores for sometimes more than half of the day. And
here in New Zealand, you're going to get to the stage now in New Zealand where Amy was at the shops the other day and said they had toilet paper stacked out the door because everybody had been panic buying so much toilet paper that they can't get rid of it anymore now because you know they ordered in more to keep up with demand, and now nobody wants toilet paper anymore. We'll see if that lasts or not, and it may vary from town to town.
But Coles have announced, our second major supermarket has announced they're lifting some of the purchase limits, which is another good sign.
I'm just going to read out the super chat here.
Yeah, I was getting to it.
You go for it.
All right, I'll go. So it's from Clark Key. Clarkie is a female, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. You got in trouble for misgendering last episode.
Yes, so thank you very much, ma'am, for the $10 New Zealand dollar super chat. The infantilizing from our dear leader is infuriating. Can't even be trusted to handle our own packages. Butcher and veg shops can't even trade. So many blindly praising her show of strength. What's the packages that she's referring to?
You can only use post. I think post for essential services. I think that's it. And if you're a non-essential business, you're not allowed to send packages around either.
Well, there's been no restrictions on our ability to send things because
but you don't have an outright communist prime minister. Yeah. That kind of makes a difference a little bit, just a little. I feel like that's got just a teeny something to do with what's going on here. And I mean her approval ratings are probably above 50% or whatever. You know, Labour Party polls will be somewhere above 50% now because you know that's the way it goes in time.
She hasn't gone the full Rodrigo Duterte model yet and said that anyone protesting in public or causing mass disturbance will be shot on sight.
Yes, now that's welcome to
He was doing that before Duterte in the Philippines with the drug dealers and users. Yeah. So it's not really a step.
No, he enjoys threatening to shoot people, and I'm sure he's actually threatened to shoot more people for different reasons as well. That's the next level up. And I've been saying it about other countries. Once you tighten the lockdown, like, what's the next step? You know, are you going to shoot people who leave their homes? Yeah. We can't joke about it anymore because, yes, that is the next step.
You mentioned last week that other police doing widespread just random stops. Have they set up traffic like checkpoints?
So far, the police. So the army. There's been discussion about the army, but the army is not being used at all. But they're on 1 hour standby. The police are doing certain checkpoints, perhaps between towns in rural areas where I can't see them. Where I am in South Auckland, lots of cops around doing stuff, but I have not seen them pull over anybody. I've not seen any checkpoints, not seen any roadblocks. I've had to go out a few times. No issue at all.
What about travel between the North and South Island? Because I think I asked or speculated about that a couple of weeks ago.
Essential only, yeah.
So the ferries and flights are still going.
Yeah. The police helicopters, as Amy just said that in the chat, the police helicopters are going all the time, especially at night. And we always did have a lot of police helicopters in this part of town. But they're going more than ever, hearing more sirens than ever as well. It's hard to tell what's going on. I suspect an increase in crime for whatever reason. As far as I can tell, the drug dealers outside are still doing business as normal.
They're not throwing them out the helicopter then.
No. The last bastion of capitalism is still alive and well. Other than that, nobody else seems to be doing anything much.
Obviously, since Australia's a federation, the states run the healthcare system and the police force there, and different states are introducing more draconian measures than others. Western Australia has probably got the most draconian, and at midnight on Sunday night they are basically declaring de facto independence. If you're not a West Australian, you are literally not welcome at all in the state. This is from Mark McGowan, the Premier of Western Australia, to any eastern staters thinking of coming to WA. Don't come right now. You're not welcome. So they're going to have a hard border closed. And they've also, Mark McGowan's also deployed drones to make sure that people are obeying social distancing. If they break those restrictions, then they'll get an ankle bracelet. If they break that, then they could get 10 years jail.
We've actually got our own semi declaration of independence here up in the far north, and you may have seen it, but one of our famous former politicians, Honi Harawira, set up roadblocks in Northland. These fake medical checkpoints where him and his bros and his cousins basically set up roadblocks and it interrogated people going in and out of Northland, which is basically only one or two main roads once you get up there.
Yeah, anyway. I remember.
And the police just let them do their thing, as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
I see our resident Northlander in the chat is very happy with that. Maybe you would be too, but they do have some virus up there. It's Kieran, sorry, it's too late. It's too late for him to stop it. It's already infected. It's already infected the independent North now.
Well, Western Australia, because it is already Australia's largest state, I'm already using the in the past tense, but they've already subdivided their new nation into regions now and restricted travel within the regions. I know that they're, because Queensland, I might not, in terms of the how the population is scattered, Queensland being a large state, there have been calls from the North and Central Queensland MPs, state and federal, to shut the border with the southeast. They don't want the Southerners to come up north and infect them and overwhelm their health system, which seems a common sense thing to do, because Brisbane is, like, it's miles away from Townsville and Cairns.
And that's one of the things you get with the socialized medicine, which is lovely. You can see now how lovely socialized medicine is because your all the elective surgery has been cancelled or postponed. I'm even hearing from people who have cancer surgery being delayed, for a couple of months or whatever. If you've got cancer, you could be dead by then. But apparently we're busy saving lives, so we have to delay people's cancer surgery. If you're wealthy enough, you can still get around that and pay for cancer surgery somewhere else if the private hospitals are taking you.
We've had the restrictions on elective surgery, though I haven't looked into myself what elective surgeries have been cancelled. It's a sort of the only sort of elective surgery I can really think of is like boob jobs and tummy tucks. That's sort of what I think
they're,
of.
They're cancelling people with eye problems who need various other operations, those who need knee, hip operations, anything else. I mean, anything that's not going to kill you straight away. And they seems like to a large extent cancer is being included in there because you still got a couple of weeks or months to go, who knows. All of it is on standby to deal with the supposed expected influx of people who need hospitals. You know, it's things like, well, okay, if we need massive hospitals, don't we have the army trained in that? And I know they're doing this in the United States as whatever, right? Get the army to set up field hospitals and redirect excess people to the field hospitals or whatever. But that's the way it is. You say, we're saving lives. We can't put value on lives. Well, you do when you've got socialized medicine. You're deciding who lives and who dies almost every day in terms of what drugs you're funding, what surgeries you're performing. You've only got so many beds. You're making all of these decisions all the time. And right now, they're putting all of this focus on this disease that seems to have the people who end up in hospital end up needing fairly advanced care, but the bureaucracy is too great. New Zealand is just not ready to actually increase capacity in any way, people are going to die because they haven't got they're not going to get the care that they don't need because they don't have coronavirus. So maybe you should find a way to inject yourself with some coronavirus if you need cancer surgery, and maybe they'll hook you up.
Because if you die from the cancer while you've got coronavirus, you're still counted as a coronavirus fatality there.
Probably. And so it goes. And the same government that's saying, oh, yeah, we want to save lives. What are they doing? They pushed abortion. Like, they pushed abortion, complete full legalization with no restrictions on abortion in the middle of this. That's 14,000 deaths caused by the government every single year. And even some of our worst case coronavirus deaths were supposedly, around 14,000. So that matches, that seems to match up pretty closely to that. They're trying to push in a euthanasia bill at the same time. Like I said, they're pushing other surgery back. If you're murderers, we have various murderers who spend a couple of years in jail and who are let go, or ones who are maybe even under house arrest at this point. They don't really care about saving lives. They don't really care about you. What they care about is the ratings, the re-elections, the clicks. They've got to be seen to be doing something, and they've got to keep somehow keep the system propped up and not overwhelmed. And that's probably, they're almost afraid this will overwhelm the system and make them look bad. And they can shovel things under the carpet that don't necessarily make them look so bad, because they've got a bigger carrot to dangle around to distract people with.
As I've said previously, it's different in Australia, given that the only state election we have coming up is Queensland in October. Victoria doesn't go to another election until 2022, New South Wales 2023. WA, they have got their state election in March 2021. That's maybe why McGowan is going so hard right now, because he's up for election in a year. South Australia, they don't, and Tasmania, they don't go until 2022 as well. The states, they're their primary reason for going hard and in some cases strictly, draconianly enforcing these containment measures is because they run the health system. And Daniel Andrews in Victoria is preparing for the worst. He's explored using our exhibition and convention centre as a makeshift morgue. They did strike a public-private hospital partnership, because since elective surgeries, most of them are not being performed. One of the private hospital operators announced that they were closing, and so the state government stepped in to collaborate with them to create more ICU beds. And because they're more motivated, as I said, because there's not an election for a while, they don't want to get swamped and have a breakdown in their health system. But it has led to the local police in Western Australia is the worst. New South Wales is probably a second. I've shown this before, this public health restrictions on a gathering movement order 2020. So this is under, these powers are granted under section 7 of the Public Health Act 2010. And so these are the only four reasons why you're allowed to leave the house. This is what the federal government has put forward, but it's up to the states how they want to enforce it. So this is how New South Wales has enforced it. This order directs that a person not without reasonable excuse leave the person's place of residence. Examples of reasonable excuse leaving for reasons involving obtaining food or other goods and services, travelling for purpose of work, education, if can't do from home, exercise, medical or caring reasons. And because public gatherings have now been restricted to two persons. Exemptions are gatherings of members of the same household, gatherings essential for work and education. You can get 6 months jail or fine of up to $11,000 for individuals and $55,000 for corporations. At the moment, the police in New South Wales and Victoria, they're mainly patrolling the public parks and venues where normal like social gatherings have happened, doing those spot checks on people who have been instructed to isolate, and they've issued fines to two businesses that were operating. There was a bar in Fitzroy in Melbourne, which is the inner city area. So one of sort of Labor's constituent seats there was frequently having people dine in, which is not allowed if you're. And there was also a brothel that was operating in Geelong as well. That they got a tip off from neighbours. There are all these cars in the street there. So those are in Victoria the two businesses that have been. I haven't heard any stories of random traffic stops of police asking what's your business for being out, though people genuinely think that is not appropriate. That would be going too far. Just sort of stick to patrolling the beaches and parks and doing the spot checks on those who have been ordered to isolate. But it's a case of the police. Sometimes they do want to flex their muscle, but they also want to seem like they're doing something. Like police cars in the parks in Sydney drove onto the parks themselves, going up to people who are sunbaking or reading books. Not breaching social distancing, but just not there for essential reasons.
Yeah. I've talked a bit about the New Zealand police sort of making up their own rules as they go along, closing down shops because they have the power to walk up to any shop and say, oh, you've got to close. And so they have various greengrocers and other businesses that they've just walked up and said, oh, you need to close now, you're gone. They pull up random people on the street after the minister, after the politician said, oh, yes, it's fine to go drive to your local park to exercise. They pull people over and said, no, you've got to go home now. You're not allowed to drive. So the police seem to have gotten their way. They've just said, the police have just said, you can't leave your suburb. So even if you want to go shopping, you can't leave your suburb. And that's something that even though democracy has been completely suspended and parliament is gone, they still have this committee that sits every day. And ACT MP David Seymour actually asked the police commissioner what the legal basis was for this statement. And he was told that he couldn't answer the question. He said, I can't answer the question. And that's the best, that's the kind of stuff that's going on at the moment. Yeah.
Well, the biggest mass outbreak in Australia has actually been caused by government incompetence. I'm not sure if I said last week, but the Ruby Princess cruise ship that was able to disembark in Sydney's harbour at Circular Quay on March 19th, 2,700 passengers were allowed to disembark, flow into the community without being tested for coronavirus, even though many of them had flu-like symptoms. 600 have been diagnosed with coronavirus and 10 have died from the virus. And our national death toll at the moment is 26 as of 3 p.m. April 3. So that means that nearly half of the deaths from coronavirus in Australia is because there's been a blame game between New South Wales Health and Australian Border Force about who let this happen. But you can just see that one error in government incompetence has contributed to so many deaths. And it's exposed a flaw in what everyone thought was our flawless border protection arrangements with the Australian Border Force. They don't have a biosecurity department or team because that's why they weren't that was the reason given why they weren't enforcing social distancing at Sydney Airport, even though that's where they are at customs, and that apparently somebody you ask them why aren't you enforcing social distancing, it's because we're Border Force, we're not biosecurity. So that's exposed that if you are going to have a border force, biosecurity is obviously an essential part of it.
But here in New Zealand, we have apparently some of the best biosecurity in the world, but the rule has been to let everyone back into the country for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, and still ongoing. People still able to come back in, which in a sense you can't or shouldn't stop your citizens from coming back, but you've got more cases of the virus here, but like you're saying, you're talking about the death toll again. Coming back to what we said at the beginning is, if you look at a regular flu season, you could say, okay, well, this is a bad flu season, we can take double the numbers or something like that. That's not being done. There's no comparison. There's no measurements. It's just, oh yes, one person's died, 10 people have died, 20 people have died, 100 people have died. None of that is necessarily an irrelevant, without any context, that means nothing, because people die every single day. People get sick and die every single day. And so it's all about the panic and the hysteria and creating fear in people what's an acceptable risk. That's a question they will not answer.
What's happening in Italy and Spain and in New York, where in New York now the death toll from coronavirus has exceeded 9/11. So there is a comparison there that, yes, we've had a low amount of deaths, but we don't want to end up like Spain or Italy. And they've made that judgment that it's just not worth relaxing any of the restrictions anytime soon.
They've made that without then looking at other countries that haven't had the same outcome as Italy and Spain and New York, where simple procedures like the social distancing, the gatherings, people working from home, without entirely trying to destroy the lives of possibly hundreds of thousands of people, right? If you've put years of your life, and you're a young person, you put years of your life into building this business, you put years of your life into saving up money, getting a house, you've got a mortgage, and now your job's gone. You put all this work into a business, it's gone. For hundreds of thousands of people, their lives, their livelihoods could be ruined, could be over. You could have all kinds of run-on effects where people die of various other reasons, where people are reduced to a life of poverty.
Suicide.
And I've seen people suicide, and on it goes, and various other complications. There was some analysis in from the Wall Street Journal about the death toll in villages in Italy, where they compared it to that of last year, and you say you had a town where normally the deaths were like 150, and This year there were like 500, but only 200 or so were of the coronavirus. And so
primarily
either those other deaths are undiagnosed virus or whatever else is going around, or somehow relate, you know, somehow run on effects for whatever reason, right? Maybe the hospitals are full, maybe they've pushed surgeries back, maybe they've reduced other care. That will become incredibly hard to diagnose. But either way, the death rate, the death toll in those areas was rising at least double that of what was diagnosed as coronavirus.
George Orwell in the chat has said, best way to protect a country, give everyone a gun. Well, that's not what's been happening in the Australian states ruled by Labor. So Victoria, Queensland, Western Australia, they've shut down gun shops because they've been alarmed at the surge in gun sales and permits to acquire because they probably fear that law-abiding firearm owners, a key word in there, law-abiding, they're scared that they might be wanting to lead some revolution or civil unrest. I had Jason Selms on my Wilms Front program Wednesday night. He hosts the Australian Hunting podcast. He's also familiar with the New Zealand situation to basically reply to these politicians who say, "Well, you know, this is not a good development at all." I'm not sure if they've ratcheted up gun control in New Zealand during this time.
No, they've just the latest announcement I saw, because they complained when it was the last day to buy stuff. So people, like all the stores had lines, and it was the duck and roar sales were on at the gun stores at the time. So they were queues outside all of the gun stores because everyone thought, oh, well, I'll go hunting out in the bush during all of this. And then they announced the next day, no, you can't actually go hunting. You can't go anywhere. You've got to stay in your house. So the gun sales have stopped, same as everyone else. What I saw today was from Gun City, where they sent out an email saying you could buy stuff today and pay by lay-by. You could basically place an order today, and they said when we reopen, prices will go up.
Well, so Zip Pay is becoming the most popular. It's not lay-by, but it's buy now, pay later, and you've got to pay later before they jack up the interest. We've also, I'm not sure, the rental and tenants situation in New Zealand. We haven't talked about the social welfare net being expanded during this time, because in our australia.gov.au has got the list of new government programs, subsidies, support packages. So we now have universal childcare in Australia. It's now free for everybody. We have two forms of welfare payments to individuals. There's the job seeker and job keeper payment. That's on top of the coronavirus supplement payment. There's a 6-month freeze on rental evictions. There's not a freeze on paying rent. Landlords and renters are encouraged to talk about short-term agreements.
Same thing, yeah.
And there's also, obviously, there's going to be more money for mental health, telehealth, domestic violence services, and emergency food relief.
Yeah, they're starting to figure out what's going to go wrong here. Yeah.
And it's a conservative government. I know this is some aspects of the media being facetious, but we're sort of now in a total welfare state now, and sort of fiscal conservatism has been thrown out the window for the time being. But basically, the Morrison government didn't know what else to do, what alternatives there were. So they've spent $320 billion so far. So we can just add that onto the national debt already.
And same thing, New Zealand up to 50 billion onto the national debt. That's for us to pay off later, for our children, our grandchildren to pay off eventually. And it you know, meanwhile we've got fruit rotting in stores. The growers can't export. They can't. Their contracts with all of their normal suppliers have dried up, so they can't get that food. The supermarkets have already got the supply chain set up. Some of them can't keep enough stock going, and they, you know, obviously reluctant to set up all kinds of new contracts and supply chains, and they take time to come online. And it just gets worse. They've just, you know, announced that they've sort of had like an animal welfare crisis where we have all these pigs and something has to be done with them. So they've now authorized that pigs can be slaughtered and pork can be processed by butchers. So we had a bit of a talk about like, oh, would halal butchers be able to operate to make halal meat? That's still under consideration. They're actually still not allowed to open at the moment. But instead, there's basically mandatory pork processing going on because somebody has to kill all the pigs and process the meat.
The pig is dirty in the Islamic religion.
Yes, I know, but the halal butchers won't be touching those.
Yeah, would they be eating? If there was no other meat left in the supermarket, was it pork, ham, and bacon?
You've got to go vegan. Sorry, that's the deal. I mean, all the meat in the supermarket that's not pork is halal anyway. Mm. And sometimes they try and sort of do the halal certification on companies that do pork as well. So theoretically, you've got your halal certified pork, which is a possibility to get. But a good Muslim would never buy that, I think. We have had some positive casualties, maybe, especially since we're getting close to having to wrap up the show. Bauer Media, print company, is gone. They printed all of these wonderful magazines like Women's Weekly and these places where Jacinda could get her face on the cover of. And they've now shut up shop. Apparently this was the final nail in the coffin. They'd been in some financial trouble. They'd then been forbidden to print. They couldn't send the magazines to anyone. All the advertising had dried up and they completely shut their doors. And
we have in Australia, Bauer Media. They bought Kerry Packers, who used to own the Nine Network, ACP, his old magazine business, and they were in the process of buying the Seven Networks Pacific magazine. So they were basically going to have an entire monopoly on Australia's magazine business, even though Bauer have shut down a few of our most iconic titles, such as Clio magazine. But of course magazines are dying a slow death, and
yeah,
obviously
dying anyway,
yeah, carrying germs, then obviously people are not going to touch them as much, but they were the most reliable source of fake news for many years.
Yeah, and so it's good to see them go out of business. Some of the media are actually taking 15% pay cuts, which is what they deserve. They're the ones who pushed, they got greedy, pushing for clicks with all the hysteria. Mm. So some of these journalists getting laid off. I've heard a good number of journalist staff are being sent home, probably, sadly, mostly just in their advertising departments. We could end up, after this is all over, with one giant media propaganda organization where all the rest all go bust. Mm. And what we're left with is just the government, the official Pravda arm of the government. So that would be quite interesting and kind of funny. I would enjoy that, I think.
Got to see a silver lining. No sort of media financial trouble during this time in Australia.
But all of your companies can keep running, so they can keep advertising.
Yeah.
Right, nobody's
advertising. Yes,
like they run on clicks, but the clicks need advertising dollars, and so they can't keep going.
A lot of our publications now do have hybrid advertising subscription models. For example, yep, most News Corp online newspapers, they have paywalls. I think the Nine newspapers, which own stuff in New Zealand, they have, 30 free articles. I think they've actually reduced it to 5 articles now. Same with the Financial Review. So I know that The Guardian has been asking their readers for money for many years now. So I think that's why they're doing better than yep. yours. The main talk of bailouts in Australia has been, our second airline, Virgin, because...
they've abandoned New Zealand altogether now. They're gone.
Yeah, so because a lot of people are fearing Australia becoming a airline monopoly again with Qantas, but I don't get... So you don't want a monopoly, so you're going to bail out a private company.
Yes, we can do the maths on that one. There's no logic in hardly any of this. It's a case of the the supposed facts keep changing every single day, and the we're locked into this plan that they're going to keep marching on, and we will see what they have in store for us at the end. It will be interesting to see what New Zealand looks like when we come out of this. Somebody did say early on in the show that normal, we're not going back to normal, and that's for sure. There won't be normal as we used to have normal. If we do end up having an election, who knows what
New
could
Zealand,
happen.
New Zealand, they'll try to go back to normal, particularly with their relationship with China, but that's definitely not going to be the case in Australia.
That's good. There's even just seeing some of the MPs, I think we've got one more example, time for one more example. If you've got the tweet that I put in there of Michael Wood, he has said, going back to the greengrocers again at the beginning, and I think this sums up the attitude of the government well, and you can sort of I'll wrap up with this. This was actually about 4 days ago when they started shutting down the greengrocers. He says, if you are a local fruit and veggie store who is organizing your customers to lobby your MP to be able to stay open, I have to advise you that you have not read the tea leaves well, no matter how beloved and convenient you are. So there you go. Good. If you're beloved and convenient, you can eat cake. Yes.
Thanks, asshole.
Basically. And that is the attitude of the government that we have, of our rulers and our politicians. And I said early on in the show, sort of they talk about saving lives. They don't really care about people's lives. They care about looking good. Mm. In the end, the banks are going to be okay. The multinational corporations are going to be okay. The rich people are going to be okay because they're going to have fun buying up all of the the cheap houses from people whose mortgages fall through. We do have a 6 month mortgage holiday, but what's if everything's back open in 6 months, how many people are still going to be unemployed? We've gone from 4% unemployment to at least double digits now. Based on what I've seen from some other countries, we're going to be at 20% unemployment or possibly higher. If you've got a 20% collapse in house prices as well, you're going to see massive mortgage sales. You're going to see massive amounts of people on the dole. And now, of course, the communist government is going into their end game where they're proposing a UBI. So they want a universal basic income, and they want to, for some reason, it's the case of we don't know true communism has never been tried before, and Jacinda is going to show us how it works.
Well,
that's their only end game, their only strategy is basically, let's try communism again because, why not?
Retweaks communism, basically, because that's what sort of UBI is.
And by the way, even in communism, the banks and the corporations and the monopolies, they walk away with all of your money. Mm. That's what communism is like.
It'll be told, I can't believe it's not communism.
yeah, exactly. So we're going to have the universal basic income, So that's the end of it. That's the end for me. And we'll come back. Maybe next week we'll have some more news on the UBI. Maybe the election will be cancelled. Maybe we'll see how. I mean, we didn't talk about much about the snitching that's been going on.
I'll
let you wrap up.
Police Minister in Victoria, Lisa Neville, David Hiscock from XYZ wrote an article on this. Lisa Neville wants you to dob in your neighbour. And he wrote the typical caption, as he does for XYZ, big fat sister is watching you, because this is... I'll show you what Lisa Neville looks like. Yep, so...
I see the chat has caught on to the bonking ban. They know where you're going.
Victorian Police Minister Lisa Neville has urged people concerned about neighbours or businesses breaking social distancing laws to call the police assistance line on... No, I won't give out the number. But, yeah, so busybodies, they're basically in a dream world, peeking out the window saying, I don't like what they're up to.
Now, I've heard stories, even family members who have had people yell at them while they're out for walks, seen somebody trying to, like, turn the garden hose on people walking by because apparently they didn't think that it was all, you know, that, you know, that person didn't live in my neighborhood. So basically setting up, you know, a massive network of snitches, you know, saying, you know, the website in New Zealand crashed. The police set up a website and it crashed. But thousands of people were trying to snitch on their neighbors. They then have a pricing, set up a new website, a new email address. Actually, they made it an email address because they realized the website thing didn't work because we had too many snitches. So you could send an email instead to Dobbin price gougers. So if your supermarket charges you too much for a cauliflower, you could go and email the government to tell them that they're charging too much money. So the monopolies that the government has set up are charging you too much money, and then the government is going to tell the monopolies to charge you, you know, that they maintain. They're going to tell them to charge you less money for the stuff that you can't buy anywhere else.
You mentioned the bonking ban. On Wednesday, Lisa Neville and Daniel Andrews said that visiting your partner if they don't live with you was non-essential travel,
and that's the case in New Zealand.
But they they walked it back later in the day, saying no, that's covered under care and mental health, and everyone interpreted because the bonking ban, the terminology came from Malcolm Turnbull's ban on ministers having relations with their staff, so it's entered the colloquialism now. So it was, yeah, it was a 6-hour temporary bonking ban in Victoria. And as I said, Daniel Andrews, with shutting down all the pubs, clubs, cafes, restaurants, he's basically screwed over a lot of his voter base, and he probably didn't want to lose the degenerates as well.
Here in New Zealand, you know, even families who are split up, so they're divorced parents and have joint custody of the children, going to see them or moving them backwards and forwards is considered to be non-essential.
Wow. Family.
So that's how cold-hearted Jacinda is. And all of these decisions, all of these rules, you can see just how absolutely, you know, how dark dark things are getting in New Zealand, and how, you know, how we walk away from this, I don't know at this point. You know, like we said at the beginning of the show, making predictions, everything changes every day. You can't really make any predictions. I'm wondering how long it will take before people catch on, if people catch on to what's going on, and just how do you walk away from this? And it's going to hurt a lot. And of course, the poor, you know, the poorer people are the ones who are going to suffer the most. And people who can afford to work at home, people who've got good job security, people who work for the government, maybe, you know, they're all set for now.
Because
you know?
if you're living paycheck, a pay cut, the public servants.
No, they're not, definitely not taking a pay cut. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck, if you're reliant on, you know, an actual productive job that makes something useful, you're currently in big trouble, and there's a lot of question marks out there. And at some point, the magic printing presses and the borrowing money from China is going to run out, you know, or someone's going to come knocking on the door asking to pay up, and that's when all of the fun stops.
Well, the show ends. I have the same feeling that I did last week. It's not so bad here in Australia, given what's happening in New Zealand. So
I need to find a way to talk up New Zealand, but it's hard at this point.
So the trophy definitely resides in New Zealand. The totalitarianism trophy.
Yep. So we basically just copied China. We copied, like we said right at the beginning of the show, we basically copied China. Jacinda got the orders from got the instructions from Beijing. I'll just do this, just take these steps and you'll be fine, is how we got rid of the virus. That seems to be essentially where we're at. And who knows, if we're back next week, we'll talk about what's happened and how things are tracking. Currently, things are not tracking super well. And it absolutely, the supposed cure is looking far worse than the disease, and it's going to be in the end a case of the doctor walking away saying the operation was a success, but the patient is dead.
Well, I'm so glad then that New Zealand never joined the Australian Federation, like the Constitution says.
Well, yeah, that'll be a loophole to get out of this. We'll have to invoke...
but Jacinda's not becoming the Prime Minister like the Twitter lefties want.
No. We'll be just we'll come begging if we can join and just sit at the bottom of the Australian totem pole. Who knows? I don't want to end on a negative note, and I do think there is going to be a positive way out, and I want to would like some white pills that I don't really have at this point, but I think they will come. They will come, right? The night is always darkest before the dawn, and so people need to see how dark things are, and they need to wake up to what's going on. And for a lot of people, that's going to involve feeling some pain. And currently, there's no pain, right? Everyone's in kind of a honeymoon phase where they're at home, enjoying, still enjoying the time off. Maybe they're not feeling any pinch in their wallets, and that's what I think is still ahead of us. People are going to stop and think, hey, hang on a minute. My business is gone. I've got no job. And was this really worth it?
Oh, well, as we've both said, we don't know what's going to happen in 1 week, let alone the next 6 months. But stay safe, Due, not just from coronavirus, but from Jacinta as well.
It's okay. Well, they can't raid me again, can they? Don't answer that.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. I hope you enjoy the show. I see the magic watching number on YouTube has been higher.
We had a big audience tonight, I know that we. On Aaron Cuckables and Wilms Front shows, the average audience had been down, but last night Uncuckables was back up to its height. So clearly, sort of whatever YouTube was sort of
doing.
Yeah. we've got a reprieve.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll take advantage of it while it lasts. I'm actually still really busy. I've still got heaps of work to do. We've got the kids at home, so I haven't been doing any writing. I'm a bit behind on the show notes. But thanks everyone for supporting the show. If I do have time to write any stuff in the next couple of weeks, it'll be on writeminds.nz. You can go there to support me as well and keep the site up and running. None of it goes directly to me. You can join us on our various groups on social media. Thank you to anyone who's come across from the BFD as well. I always embed the video on there, and all of my articles end up there. So thank you to the BFD for that. And that's it for me.
Yeah, and of course, theunshackled.net, that's where you can find our articles, and also it's a hub for the latest Unshackled Productions episodes. My show, Wilms Front, will be back next week to its regular nights, Mondays 7 p.m. and Wednesdays 7 p.m. Melbourne time on Tim Wilms' YouTube channel. And of course, you can check out the archive and my own social media links at timwilms.com. I've already got my guests lined up for next week. I'll be speaking with the operator of SJW Central Channel on YouTube, because they are based in Tel Aviv, Israel, which also has quite strict containment measures and lockdowns. So I'm going to be interviewing them, because Israel is sort of at the same infection rate and death total as Australia, so it'd be good. It'll make a good comparison. And I've also just done a pre-record just before with Dr. Tanvir Ahmed, who's a psychiatrist, a regular commentator in the Australian media, in the Australian Financial Review, and on Sky News, in my view, just about the mental health aspects of the coronavirus containment measures, and the Uncuckables will be back to twice a week. It's Tuesday and Thursday, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on its YouTube channel, and then of course we end it all back here again next week for Trad Tasman talk. So plenty being produced on this end. So have a good weekend, everybody, and I'll see you again on Monday.
Good night, everyone. I will see you next Friday.
Yep. Good night. Thanks for watching.